Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're continuing on with our quarterback review, our quarterback countdown 10 to 1. And we're doing that with Jordan Coe of Raven Sit Room. Jordan, how you doing? You're on mute, my friend.
Glad to be back here, Ken, even though I was muted. Sorry about that.
We're happy to have you back. Great discussion in part one about the bottom five quarterbacks, which I think in this draft were a very interesting group. Your top five, certainly interesting group too, and a lot of discrepancy there. But in the bottom five, a lot of difference of opinion on who really should be on the list at all. What you want in terms of projectability at quarterback. I thought some outstanding thoughts on that from Jordan, and what you want not only in terms of projectability but in terms of variance. Do you want a high variance quarterback in the AFC, because the quarterback play is at such a high level? You might strike out with a Joe Milton, but you might really hit it big. And then certainly if you ever wanted a high variance outcome on your quarterback, I think Joe Milton might be your guy. I think there's truth to the notion that he fits with an AFC team.
Yeah. And I think it's super interesting from a Ravens perspective, looking at these kind of bottom level quarterbacks, in the sense that, like, I mean, you know, even we just talked about how high we think McCarthy's going to go. I mean, these next five guys that we're going to talk about are, not even in the realm of reason for the Ravens to even have any consideration. So it's a little fun to talk about these guys from a perspective that I know that you and I both enjoy.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, and yet still we hope, and as we said in the first show, that we want these quarterbacks, we want there to be a run on quarterbacks, because I think that benefits the Ravens in terms of who they get at the end of the first round, whether it ends up being a tackle, as I would hope, a left tackle, as I would hope, a wide receiver, or a cornerback. I think all of those are possibilities for the end of round one. But they hopefully will have a pretty good palette of players, and someone will drop. Someone that we think is very good will drop, and then the Ravens might not take him anyway. They might trade out of the pick. So it is what it is. But we cut off the first show with you making your number six pick. And who is your number six guy?
My number six guy was JJ McCarthy.
Was McCarthy. Okay, so we did do him. And so it was my number six guy we didn't do. Mine is Michael Penix of Washington. So a guy I think will almost certainly go in round one. Not 100% sure thing, but he's got that kind of prototypical size, a lot of big-time throws. He really looks for big-time throws in terms of going down the field. Does not have many turnover worthy plays, which for most quarterbacks, that would be a good thing. You know, there's some, anytime you have a quarterback who is fairly polished, you worry that his turnover throws are low because he's too careful with the football. Penix is too careful with the football in an unusual way. He doesn't like to throw between the numbers as often, so he likes to throw the deep out. And the deep out, of course, you can put it out of bounds. You can out throw the defender. It's much easier to not have a window close. Well, you don't really have a window closing. You have the risk of making sure the safety is not in the wrong place on that throw. But you generally don't have a window closing on those outside throws. So it's something where he has taken many fewer chances on those. But definitely a guy who likes the deep ball and reminds me very much of early Flacco in terms of being a guy who just an unremorseless fastball with the football.
Yeah, tremendous talent. I've got Penix actually as my number four guy. I think when you talk about arm talent and what that brings to a team, that he is off the charts. And I think that, you know, it's one of those interesting things where you wonder where – I don't know if you've seen any of these clips, but where they flip it around and they show him as a right-handed quarterback versus a left-handed quarterback. Oh. And you watch that and it's just naturally more appealing because it's what we see prototypically on a regular basis when we're watching football games. But I think that he has the ability to make those reads. And I think that some of avoiding those throws also says to me, good anticipation, good like coaching probably is part of that, where they're saying, we don't want you to be taking some of these risky throws. We want you to be looking to some of these other places, you know, what some of those are. But I think from just an arm talent level alone, he's probably the second best of this, I'd say this top six group that we're talking about. And I think to me that drives him kind of up the kind of overall chain here. I think he has work to do in terms of his footwork. He has work to do in terms of developing, but I think that you get projection in that he's riding his arm. And so if you feel like as a coaching staff, you can bring some of those other pieces to his game and in these interviews and in the coaching, you know, it depends on how you want to read it, right? I'm saying that this means that you're well coached and that you're making the correct reads and you're going through your progressions correctly. Somebody else might see it exactly the opposite way. You're only going to find that out by putting him in an interview, showing him a play, asking him what happened and hearing the answer, and maybe asking the coach the same thing and making sure that those things jive.
That's an interesting way to think about it, and whether or not you get that kind of answer is if you've got the ability to show film in those interview rooms. I don't know what kind of ability they have. They probably have some. And you know, just describe what happened here, what you're looking at, and why you didn't make this throw, kind of thing. That would be interesting to know. One thing I'll say is there's two characteristics that go with a reduced number of over the middle throws, and one of them we mentioned in terms of Milton, meaning needing a direct line to the receiver and wanting a clean throwing lane. And what that is usually an indicator of is a guy who's not great making up and down throws. So the guy who has more difficulty getting the ball over the linebacker and in front of the safety on those very common level two, level three plays where a lot of quarterbacks are have their bread and butter. And, you know, from that perspective, I think he's a guy who is a risk in this draft. And that's my big hit on Penix. He is the right at the top or right near the top in terms of pure arm talent, in terms of his ability to throw the fastball, certainly. You know, and then that kind of worries me. He's not the guy who's a little higher on this draft, we'll get to later, has good over-the-top fundamentals that make him an excellent level two, level three thrower, whereas I don't think Penix has that, obviously. So he's a guy who worries me a little bit in that, but very much Baltimore football has had three guys at least who I think of in terms of just always throwing the ball too hard. And that's Burt Jones from the 1970s, Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, by the way, extremely good control and over the top motion, which is something Penix does not have. Okay. It's not apparent. So having control of the football and even watching Flacco do that at 38 with the Browns, he has still got that. He's got a very much a downhill Bob Gibson type fastball, but he's still got touch on the ball to get it between level two and level three and have good control. And it's not what I've seen from Penix at this point. There's tremendous arm talent there. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of ability to make deep throws that has shown up in college and certainly we've been entertained by. I'm just not sure how that projects to the NFL level. Not a threat to run at all. Scrambled eight times in 2023, 35 in six college seasons. So
I think that that's potentially the most interesting part about Penix, though, which is that he has the physical athletic ability to do so. Super athletic guy overall, super athletic profile when you just like watch him kind of as an athlete. And so you wonder also how much that has to do with system and coaching and what you're being told to do. And so are you doing that because you're told to or not to? How do all those things play out? I mean, you hear the same conversation when it comes to Lamar right now about some of those instances where people were like on the play in the Kansas City game where he threw the interception. A lot of people on replay were like, why didn't you run? There was 12 yards in front of him that could easily be had. 12 yards in everybody else's world was really 18 yards in Lamar's world. Take the 18 yards. Don't take the risk. It's there. Felt like the Ravens have been coaching or Lamar has been pushing himself to stay in the pocket or hold the ball longer, right? Is that a coaching thing? Is that a system thing? You know, which one of those are there? And could Penix be legitimately good in terms of being a runner? He ran what, like a four or five today, you know, at his pro day. It's there. The ability is there. So is it he can't run? Is it he doesn't want to run? Is it he's looking to protect his health? Was it system? I think there's intrigue that comes with that. And again, that projectability, when we talked about variance, I'm a variance guy. You know, to answer your question from earlier, I'm definitely a variance guy. I want the guy that's going to be able to be the best possible in that instance. And I think that those gray areas push Penix to the positive in this instance for me, whereas a guy like McCarthy might have age on his side, but he's just not going to show the same kind of athleticism, arm strength, some of those kind of things.
So I'm just looking at reports because I had not heard the 450, and I'm seeing between 446 and 449 is the claim at his pro day. So 450 sounds about right in terms of that. That's very impressive. And that certainly sounds like a guy who could be coached to do some things differently. He's got a lot of coaching up that's necessary. And Penix is a guy who it's not obvious he's a 2024 guy, whereas some guys who are lower on the list, and Spencer Rattler would be my first guy, I think he's more pro ready. He's more ready to step into the lineup right now. Even though Penix has made some big time throws, Rattler, you know, has a lot more college experience in total. And I just think he'd be more ready to step in at this point. But, you know, the quarterback going down with the ship is a general problem with guys who have longer time to throws. So, by the way, time to throw, one of the most misunderstood statistics for a quarterback of all. If you have a low time to throw, it's often because you need to have a low time to throw. You need to get that ball out quickly. You face a lot of pressure. Your team doesn't do a good job pass protecting. You're the Cincinnati Bengals, and you're protecting Joe Burrow. And he has arm strength issues also, so you don't want to take chances down the middle of the field. You want to be very careful with your deep shots. That's a guy who has a low time to throw. If you're Lamar Jackson, high time to throw is fine because you generally accrue value from forcing more decisions out of that defense that can generally get you yards, whether they're on the ground or, you know, with a late extended play. And we saw, you know, plenty of that from Lamar in both of his MVP seasons. So, but then other quarterbacks, your typical pocket passer, longer time to throw is generally bad. You know, if you divide out the short and the long, the longer time to throws end up being some really bad situations. But it really is quarterback dependent for whom a long or short time to throw is good. But Penix is one of the players I'd be a little concerned because of some of this closing window issues, the potential weakness in terms of up and down throws that I would be concerned about with longer time to throw at the NFL level. And he has not shown any indication that he's willing to do anything but extend in terms of play, given his college career.
I like Penix a lot. I think you're right that he's a year away. I think that the ability to develop him appropriately could be really valuable at the NFL level. I think what's interesting as a contrast to an evaluation of just like what you think about him as a player is where could he ultimately land, right? Like, so what team is going to want him and where would that be a good fit? And I think that those numbers could potentially be smaller and that Penix is probably the guy most likely to slip in this draft. If we're talking about a guy that is actually there when the Ravens are picking, he seems like the guy that might be there. Like before Henry left Tennessee, brilliant, you know, and whether, you know, whatever you think of Spears and his ability to take that on, he seemed like potentially a really good fit for that type of offense, right? Would it seem like he would have been a really good fit for like an Atlanta type offense, but then they go out and add Kirk Cousins. And so then it's just like in the carousel of where guys are, and a guy like Penix's skill set, who is close in terms of where they are with that. And so if he gets by, you know, kind of like the Minnesota Denver range of picks, who's the other team in that range? The Raiders, Las Vegas. I could see a rapid slide potentially happening once you kind of get past that 12, 13, 14, 15 pick round area for him.
Okay. I probably bet you a beer that he goes in the first round. And not the second, but the you know, and you had Penix higher than I did, so presumably he's my number six guy, you're number four guy. Presumably you think he's going to be there, and I think JJ McCarthy and other people who are less physically gifted, more developed, and younger, that combination is probably going to push him up the board. But I think Penix goes in the first round, and I think he's the kind of player we kind of hope. We certainly hope the six quarterbacks are taken in the top 29, but if five quarterbacks were taken in the top 29, that might not be bad either, because I think the Ravens have a tradable commodity there, which is why looking at the teams who have a pick there is not really the whole story. I think it's who could move up to there. And, you know, if the Ravens are willing to trade that pick and they're really looking for multiple selections, whether, you know, a two, a three, and a four, like they got for the who was the guy, the running quarterback, Tebow, for the Tebow pick. They got it. They moved down and they got a two, a three, yeah, and a four. So they didn't make that work, by the way. They didn't make those picks work, but they did pick up some real value out of that draft. I think Penix could be a guy who, you know, allows the Ravens to drop somewhere into the 40s maybe and take more of a project left tackle. Say a Paul out of Houston or one of the other guys.
I think we're actually kind of saying the same thing. I'm saying that if Penix doesn't go in that Minnesota, Denver, Vegas, New Orleans range of 11 to 14, and those are kind of the four teams that I think are the right fit for him, potentially Seattle at 16, but who really understands what they're doing there in their quarterback situation, because it's Geno Smith. That complicates things, I think, for them and where they want to be on all that. If he gets out of that range, I think he is – I don't think he's going to fall out of the first round, so I wouldn't bet you a beer on that. But I would – I think he's likely to be the sixth guy off the board, even though I like him fourth. So
okay.
These are our preferred rankings, right, not where we mock rank them. I think there's a decent chance that – if he gets past 14, that he's there at 30.
Right. And that is a point to be clear on this. As we made these 10-to-1 rankings, I did them as who I want, the who I think has the most value to the Ravens, 10-1. Not that it really matters towards the top of the quarterback rankings, because the Ravens won't get any of them. But for you, you used a slightly different system, or explain again.
Just the, who I just thought the best quarterback was going to be. I guess, you know, not absent of Ravens system, you know, who would be best for the Ravens?
Okay. Agnostic, system agnostic. Okay. Well, now we only spent, about 15 minutes there going off over my number six quarterback. And now we actually get to the top five, which is the second part of the show. Who do you have at number five?
Number five, I got Bo Nix, who I think is also really intriguing. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, I just didn't, when I had watched him play before this year, there was plenty of hype and plenty of kind of positive things being said about him. And it felt like you didn't see a lot of that. And it did feel like he finally put it together this year. Now, is that team scenario? Is that coaching scenario? Obviously, Bo Nix's numbers were absolutely off the charts. Like, yep. If you're just going from a statistical perspective, he falls right in with those Oregon quarterbacks that just dialed it up and have insane statistical numbers. He did it in an improvement within the system in a second year. That's something that I like. And being able to see that as his ability to grow and kind of develop from that perspective, showing that there is at least potential ceiling or upside to come on the other side of that, and the ability to make a lot of different types of throws and make a lot of different types of reads, at the line of scrimmage, seem to check a lot of those boxes. Not quite the same talent, I think, that you see in some of these other quarterbacks in any of the areas. So he's kind of like the, if Penix is the best thrower and another guy is who we probably agree is the best runner, you know, Nix is neither better than either of those guys, but maybe potentially better than the other at the other thing. I don't know if that made sense. So a better thrower than Daniels, a better runner than Nick, or a better runner than Penix, or however you want to kind of shape some of those things up, he's a bit more even keeled across the board. And so in that sense, I think there are a lot of teams that could find him to be really appealing. And I think he's an intriguing prospect, also been around a long time, but shown a lot of development over those years.
Yeah, and maybe we go back to a Spencer Rattler type player. I mean, Bo Nix finished in a pretty good situation at Oregon offensively, in terms the team around him was pretty good. 45 touchdowns and 3 interceptions this last year, obviously, is just ridiculous. He is the most extreme quick release quarterback in this draft, or one of them at 244. This is what's incredible, and it's kind of Marino-esque in terms of he only had 3 batted balls all year. But you also don't sack him. He only took 6 sacks the whole year. Very, very quick release under pressure. Another guy who looks a little bit like Joe Burrow, but I give him the props and say even looks a little more like Dan Marino in terms of his ability to just whip the ball out of there when the pressure arrives. Now, on the other side of that are some reasons for concern, I would say, and that is he only has a 6.8 ADOT, and that will be typical of a lot of players where you're trying to run more of an offense where you're trying to find space for the football and you're trying to go to the outside quickly, as Burrow does in Cincinnati. But I don't think we have a good sense of who he is, because I think there will be more effective ways to get after him at the NFL level. The college level, he actually got blitzed a fair amount, and it was a huge mistake to do so. Just a huge mistake. Gets rid of the football. Great hot reader. And it's something pro offenses, even if Bo Nix would get playing time in 24, which I think he's ready to do. I think he's ready to step right in. He'd be a guy that defensive coordinators would actually have to worry about and say, okay, what's the effective pass rush plan for this guy? And I think it'd be a more conservative plan. You drop 7, you let him make his own mistakes. His arm talent is not at the very top of the draft. It's good, but it's not at the very top of the draft. And so from that perspective, that's why he's not, you know, first or second on this list of quarterbacks as he might be otherwise, if he really had elite arm strength. And I think I there is a very intriguing prospect here. I think he goes number 5 in the draft I don't know that he goes number 5 in the draft. He's my 5th favorite quarterback, and he's a first round pick, I would say, not a 2. But it'll be very interesting exactly where he goes, given what he brings to the table. A lot has been made for whatever reason about his age, and he turned 24 in February. And there's other guys, might have been Milton turned 24 in March, and you know, other people have turned 24 before the season starts or in September. I actually don't think there's any problem with him being 24. He is an extraordinarily polished quarterback. That's the bigger problem for me is, have we seen everything he's got to offer in a very good, comfortable environment at Oregon?
Yeah, I mean, that's this is the fun part about this group of quarterbacks, right? And like this kind of all six of these top guys, I think, is that it's like there's no formula and there's no science. This is part of what makes the NFL and the NFL draft fun, is that you can have all kinds of opinions about some of these guys, and some guys that seem like they should be locks aren't, and other guys that seem like they were, you know, at the top of their maturity level, still have projectability when they actually got to the NFL. Knicks is a fascinating prospect in that regard. And like you were saying, that 45-3 touchdown interception ratio is just unbelievable. 15 rushing touchdowns is, I guess, his first senior year. Is it's not his junior year. His first senior year.
Yeah.
15 rushing touchdowns, again, byproduct of system. Anybody that's watched Oregon play football, even if you haven't watched a lot of Oregon football, you know that's what they like to do out there. And so how do you translate that? Fascinating stuff about how teams have to break this down and you know, where preferences end up lying. He seems like the guy that, out of all of these guys, is the one that is interestingly the least talked about of kind of, because with yeah. McCarthy getting some of the buzz into the top 10 and maybe even the top five that he's gotten, Bo Nix just feels like a guy that is just not really being talked about. And that makes him a very intriguing prospect for where he might ultimately go off the board, because teams could be being silent on it on purpose, and they might really love him for many of the reasons that we've already talked about here. And he goes ahead of some of the guys we didn't anticipate.
Yeah, I mean, for exactly the reason you stated, and then looking at the cost of, in terms of draft capital, it will take to get Bo Nix. I think it is variable. I think we could see him going at 14. I think we could see him going at, you know, I guess you could see him going early in the second round, but I see him going as a first round pick, but we could see him going as, you know, as high as the top 15 and going as low as into the 30s. And that's a lot of variability in terms of draft capital. And if I'm approaching this problem as a general manager, and I'm a team who just made the playoffs last year, but needs a quarterback, you know, and I'm not saying there are so many of those, but there are some that you know, need to move on from an older quarterback, you know, the Kirk Cousins situation, whatever. If I'm in that position, I know I can't get to the top of the draft to get one of the top guys. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, they're all going to be off the board before I pick. I can't possibly trade my entire draft, which is what it would take to move up into the top 10 if I've got the 24th pick or something. At that point, I have to take a lesser quarterback, and then I have to try and figure out who's the guy who might drop to me. And the Ravens did a good job of it with Joe Flacco. They traded down, then they traded back up to get Joe Flacco at 18. I think Nix is the kind of guy who I think a lot of teams will be waiting on. And if he's still around at 30, even if there's only four quarterbacks off the board at that point, I think it's possible somebody likes Nix a lot more than Penix. Great pair of names, that, by the way.
I was thinking that earlier, but I referenced one and I was like, oh wait, I think I meant the other. Wait, I'm not actually sure.
Yeah, but no, it's a cool pair of names to have, being your 5-6 quarterbacks in the draft, or at least as I have it. But if you had two guys, I think that there'd be enough people who would think Nix is a better guy than Penix, is more polished, more ready to go, can help us this year, blah 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 blah. You know, he has to sit on the bench for four games and not a whole season. I think he could represent tremendous trade down value for the Ravens if they could, move out of that number 30 pick. So, be exciting. You know, part of me wants all the quarterbacks to be gone. The other part wants 5 out of 6 to be gone. And yet another part wants only 4 guys to be gone, so that whoever somebody loves is the guy that gets drafted at 30. There you go.
I mean, this is going to be. Yeah, no, I was just going to agree with you. I was just going to say, if you're looking at the draft order, there are some, in some senses, most teams feel pretty settled when it comes overall to the quarterback position. But then if you broaden the scope of that and you talk about guys like Carr or Stafford or Tua, and you're talking about guys like Penix and Nix, these are guys that could be decent replacements for them not long after that. Those are picks in the, you know, the Jets at 10, the Vikings at 11, if they decide not to trade up. You know, there's all that kind of murmur around them trading up, but the Jets, the Vikings at 11, Denver at 12, Vegas at 13, New Orleans at 14, Seattle at 16, Rams at 19 and Miami at 21 are all very, when you're in this ability to, like, especially if you're Miami and you're worried about Tua getting hurt, having a guy like Knicks to be behind him and also then potentially being the guy to replace him because you don't like Tua, or if you're a Mike McDaniel type and you really want Penix because he can sling it. I mean, imagine Tyreek Hill and Michael Penix playing together. I mean, it was just Tyreek Hill would win the MVP that year, without a doubt in my mind. You know, and same with a guy like Milton, just chuck it up to him. But you know, when you're looking at that range of picks, there are a lot of teams that could make a pretty reasonable case for taking a quarterback in that range amongst the ones that I just named, and that's absent of the top three, who we assume are all going to take a quarterback, and kind of leaves Tennessee out of that conversation as well.
Kind of an ideal year for the Ravens. And again, please join us on any of the 3 days of the Ravens draft, because it's all from the Ravens perspective. But it's a great draft year for the Ravens to have this kind of depth at quarterback when they don't need a quarterback, and have this kind of depth of cap at tackle when they do need a tackle, even if a lot of the left tackle candidates actually are fairly limited. There's a few guys who need to move inside. There's a couple of guys who can only play right tackle reasonably, but there's still hope that the Ravens can get a guy who can be the next left tackle. And that's going to be one of the things we're really looking for on draft day. And there'll be people on who are big panelists that want a wide receiver or who want a corner. And, you know, we want to have some nice balance in there in terms of who we have there. And it'll be a very fun 3 days. It was always Maureen sometimes pines about it a little bit, because she has said that used to be our most romantic time of the year. We'd spent 17 hours together watching the draft. She's not really involved in this in the same way she used to be. So she's kind of bummed out about it. But it's a lot of fun for the watch party to be going through pick by pick and just saying, you know, how this impacts the Ravens. And I hope you'll join us for that. All right. So I had Knicks at number five, and you had who at number five?
Knicks. I had Knicks at number
Knicks
five.
Also. Great. Okay. So, and then at number four, I think we got to flip again who we've talked about, because you had Penix and I had McCarthy.
That's right.
Okay. So that was our difference, 4 versus 6 being the same. So we'll go all the way up to number three now. Who's your number three guy? Now it becomes very interesting.
This one was tough for, I know this one was tough for me, because the guy that I ended up going with number one, I don't actually like at number one, but we can talk about that when we get there. But I've got Drake May at number three, which follows with my high variance type conversations. I also think there were some plays that popped, but when you watch some Drake May highlights, he does a lot of stupid stuff. Like just some really bad throw decisions, some bad run decisions, you know, his pocket awareness I thought was really poor. A lot of instances where he's just like bumping into guys where it seems like he should have some sense that he shouldn't be bumping into them. And like, you know, it's just, I think that he's one of those guys that has the arm talent, but not the head for it. And when it's going to come down to it at the NFL, those guys are the guys that bust the hardest, like the Kyle Ballers of the world, where all the arm talent in the world, you know, peanut sized brain when it comes to being able to progress and do the, you know, I'm not saying that they're stupid people, but just in the world of how football operates and progressions happen, I just, every time I watch Drake May, and there were some things that Jaden Daniels said that were dumb, a couple of things that really kind of popped that were stupid that he did, but Drake May just consistently seemed like he had a couple of those plays every single game. If that's going to happen at the NFL level, that's just a guy that is really going to have to ride his talent to supersede that to be successful. The Brett Favres of the world, right? That are going to be so great at the other things that their negatives can be overridden at that in that process.
Yeah, so didn't have a great situation in North Carolina this last year. I think that's fair to say. They were only 4-4 in the ACC, so they weren't a dominant team. May is a guy who does represent a lot of what you want in the old time statue quarterback, as a 6'4", 223 guy, going to grow into that frame, probably be a little heavier, might be go to 235. The thing I really like about May is he seems to have very good control on his throws that are level two and level three over the top throw. He's got a much more predictable throwing motion that I think does very well. And I mentioned earlier in terms of Flacco, and you know, I don't want to relate everything back to what Joe Flacco looks like. Is somebody's Flacco and somebody's not Flacco. But on the other hand, we know what Joe Flacco was as a quarterback, and he had that over the top motion that was very good for not only velocity but touch between level two and three. And May has that. One of the things that shows up is something that was true of Lamar Jackson for about 3 years there. In fact, I'm not even sure Lamar's completely rid of it, but it was certainly true of Lamar through 21 at least. So 18, 19, 20, and 21 is Lamar would get out in space on the run, and he would just try and hand the ball, as Bruce Arians puts it, to the...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Receiver and an open receiver, and the ball would come up short by 4 yards. And, you know, having one throw like that per game where he's just wildly inaccurate for no apparent good reason is something that you know, has been true of Drake May. But oftentimes it could sail out of bounds. It could be a ball that oftentimes would come up short of the receiver. And it's very frustrating to watch. It's like, you know, why did he miss that throw? Well, he tried to hand it to him. You know, anyway, it is what it is. The 9 interceptions were a lot. I blame a lot of that on who North Carolina was as a team. But he had actually one of the best turnover-worthy throw rates among all quarterbacks at 1.9%, much better than an average quarterback, and even on par or better than most of the top quarterbacks in this draft. So I like that number in particular for him. He's had 16 career rushing touchdowns. He's not really a threat as a runner in the way we think of it. I think he's the guy who can get you an occasional first down, not the centerpiece of an RPO offense. He's going to be more of a play action, probably under center offense where you drop back and try and make plays, be a field reacquirer. He is also my number three guy in this. And he's got one other characteristic that I really like, I want to get to, but I want to give you a chance to react to what I just laid out there.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And the issue for me is that you can forgive Lamar being a terrible thrower for being a tremendous runner, right? Where Drake May, not a bad runner, but not Lamar in that level. And so when you're looking at a guy that prototypes as a classic quarterback, you know, it's somewhat concerning, you know, in that sense. So
I
agree with most of what you said, though.
Yeah, he can't afford to be 3% lower in terms of completion percentage than another quarterback because he makes an occasional bad throw. It matters. It does. But this is the thing I really liked about him. He was really deadly when he had time in the pocket. He's very effective when given time for the play to develop. And, you know, going back to Manning and Brady towards the end of their career and the quarterbacks they began, and, you know, obviously, if anybody had truly coming out of this draft, Manning or Brady's talent as a field general and vision, all the things that went into those, I mean, they it wouldn't be any question about who was number one in the thing. And Drake May is not that guy. But he's already a guy who has a combination of look-off and pump fake characteristics that I really like. Kind of reminds me in a little way of Ben Roethlisberger in that regard, as a guy who can move a safety and who can also use the pump fake effectively. Now, Roethlisberger would overuse the pump fake too, and he'd get sacked because of it. But I think May is a guy who, you know, goes to the right situation, could all of a sudden be great. And if he goes to the Jets, he could be terrible. You know, and that's the old Jets before they acquired every offensive lineman that was available in the entire world.
Yeah. You're not concerned about his hand size at all, Ken.
You know, actually, I didn't see his hand size. It's not. Is it 9 inches again?
Nine and an eighth.
I should be. I didn't pick up on it in his case, but I should be. Yeah. I'm trying to.
Is that smaller? Alex Smith was 3/8.
Eight and 3/8.
Alex Smith 9 3/8.
Oh, I didn't think he was
9 3/8.
No,
Kenny Pickett was what, like 8.5, and that was like the smallest, would be by far the smallest of like anyone, wasn't it?
Yeah. Alex Smith and Russell Wilson both 9 3/8.
There you go. So, so Drake May getting no attention for his small hand size, but 9 1/8.
And this is obviously some sort of looking for Tony Banks' hand size. Tony Banks' hand size is actually 9.5 inches. So anyway, I hope this doesn't endanger any of the comparisons I've made here. But yeah, that would be a negative for Drake May in terms of having a concern about him. I don't know if it would move him.
I thought you were going to say that's why you had him in three, Ken.
No. I whiffed on it, but I don't know that it would move him. I got to think about whether I'd move him behind McCarthy because of that. I don't know. Quite possibly Drake May should drop a slot because of that. But there is a fairly big differential in my mind between the top four and Nixon Penix in terms of.
And we didn't mention this, but Drake May also on the younger side as well. In terms of projectability and kind of viability, will be 22, I think, this year during the NFL
season.
That's
very young.
So,
yeah.
I think is that right? Or did I read that wrong?
You know what? For birthdays,
yeah, he's
21,
currently born in August 30th.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely what you'd be looking for there. All right. Well, May was my number three guy and your number three guy. So now we move on to the number two and number one. I changed my number two guy to number one, like literally 5 minutes before the show. I've been back and forth on these two for a long time, but go ahead and go with your number two guy. And I'm sure have a pretty good debate about this. I'm sure we got the same two players at the top of the draft.
Well, we better, we're doing something wrong. We don't have the same two guys left here. I've also gone back and forth about this, and I did not change where I was on this. I wanted to change where I was on this, and I wanted ultimately at my gut, I wanted to make the guy that I had number one, number three, and the guy I had at number two, number one. But I've got Jaden Daniels as the two guy. I think he's, you know, obviously from a ceiling perspective, is a more polished version of Milton, a more successful version statistically of Milton. I mean, and again, this is just so hard to gauge where some of these things land in college, but statistically, kind of like Bo Nix's 45-3 touchdown to interception ratio. I mean, some of Jaden Daniels' numbers were just absolutely incredible. Explosive. Yeah. Like the yards per attempt. I mean, it's just almost to the point where it's like you can't even use that as a barometer in your evaluation of the player because it's so extreme that they must have just found some hack to make some of that kind of stuff work. But at the same time, you still have to make the reads. You still have to make the throws. You still have to make the plays. Jaden Daniels does it both ways, on the ground, in the air. The only thing that held me back from making him number one were some of the boneheaded plays I referenced earlier, where when he is running, he seems to have no wits about him and no fear. And Lamar was a little like that in college, but he didn't have the bad. Jaden Daniels has three or four really bad plays on tape where he's gotten popped hard and fumbled the ball, and that was in college. And you didn't really see that with Lamar. And then Lamar really kind of reverted, isn't the right word, but took a turn towards each year in the NFL, Lamar has gotten safer and safer and safer about how he runs the ball and the top speeds that he runs at, how he gears up and gears down. All of that is constantly on his mind. I think he knows that availability is the most important part of what that looks like for him. Not turning the ball over when he's running the ball is one of the most important parts that he can do. He's really developed in those ways. Jaden Daniels looks a guy that needs to learn that lesson really badly. And that's the thing that might scare you about that, because that's kind of what happened to, I wouldn't say Vic was a reckless runner, but I would say that his career was shortened by the recklessness of his style at running at times. He definitely got crunched, tried to jump over guys, backflips into the end zone, over players, all kinds of crazy stuff that he would regularly do that risked his health and I think shortened his career, that Lamar has by and large avoided. Jaden Daniels seems like a guy that is going to be more like Michael Vick and less like Lamar Jackson in that sense.
You know, I could buy that. Daniels, I moved into the number one spot, so he's my number one. I know the Bears have already drafted Caleb Williams, so I'm saying the Bears are wrong about this, by the way, saying the You can make a living saying the Bears are wrong about their draft picks, certainly, of what they've done in history. But he's got that kind of ideal size at 6'4", 210, and he's made use of it at the college level. And the big number for me, and obviously the fumbles are they're not a zero issue, although I think they can be dealt with. What you can't take away from it is he had 65 attempts running the football this last year with 47 missed tackles forced. 47. That's an absurd number. And That was despite the fact that 55 of his 65 attempts were scrambles. Now, it 10 plus games of 10 plus rushes, you're forced to have a spy on the field against him, and he beats them anyway. You know, he's one of these rare athletes you get as a runner who has a lot of the positive passing characteristics, but is not fully developed there clearly, but, you know, has some things there, despite the 143.7 passer rating in the NCAA last year. That's, by the way, that is 208 on the NCAA scale. That's 143.7 translated to the NFL scale, which is, you know, unbelievably high, certainly. But there was a fairly high sack rate the last 2 years, 42 years ago. And remember, this is not a 16 or 17 game season. That's 40. He's taken in a 13 game season or whatever it was. 21 as a senior. But here's the impressive thing. Despite taking 21 sacks in his last year, he had 7.9 yards per play when forced not to pass. Okay, so that's combining the 21 sacks with the 55 scrambles. And I had the numbers right in front of me. It was 55 scrambles for 721 yards. It's one of the off the charts numbers you're referring to. And then you subtract out his sacks numbers, and he's still at 7.9 FNTP. To put that in context, Lamar Jackson in his first MVP season had one of the greatest years of all time. And I forget if he was 5.2 or maybe even 5.6 for the season. But Daniels, and admittedly at the college level, is 2 yards, 2 full yards and change better than that. It's just it's another stratosphere. And I think a guy like him, you know, if I'm looking at him, he kind of reminds me of Jalen Hurts in some ways with some more positive characteristics. I think he's a guy who pretty much jumps in right away and gives you some non-mistake free but still high quality football in his rookie season in the NFL.
I mean, I absolutely could see that. He's a ton of fun to watch. I mean, if he was drafted, I mean, in the same way that I was excited when the Ravens drafted Lamar Jackson, it would be the same level of excitement for Jaden Daniels. He just absolutely, just a total joy to kind of like as a football fan to watch play, and has these things that just are incredible. The size, I think. The fact that he does it at 6'4 is impressive. So you get shades of Josh Allen in terms of and his durability as a result of having some more of that bulk and some more of that size also kind of like feed into the positivity of this. But, you know, not as good of a passer, you know, overall, I think from like a pocket awareness standpoint, a lot of kind of deep one-on-one throws. And I think the one thing that he gets dinged on, which is not his fault, but he gets dinged for having neighbors as the wide receiver that he's throwing the ball to as well. Yeah. There's, you know, having the talent around you and being able to try and separate what that wide receiver talent then means for your quarterback talent. And then looking at the other guy that we'll talk about next and who his talent that he was throwing to comparatively. Yeah. If you paired him up with neighbors, maybe we were going to see some eye popping numbers as well. It's just, you know, once somebody figures out how to parse that out in a way that's guaranteed, they're going to make a lot of money.
Daniels, I mean, I have one other thing to say is that his velocity is not at the top of the group. And that is another thing where you just can't teach that. So if Daniels and, you know, think about Lamar. Lamar is the elusive runner, and Daniels' ceiling can't really be as high as Lamar, even though he could be Josh Allen as a runner. He won't have Josh Allen's velocity. He won't have, you know, Lamar Jackson's velocity or even probably the ability to throw the deep ball at a similar level for either quarterback. So it does limit where his ceiling is, but, you know, he's got such an impressive ability to be that guy who forces defenses to account for him to their own detriment. That is why I moved him into the number one spot. And as much as I really like Caleb Williams, and he is, you know, obviously the big time arm, can make all the throws, a guy you can certainly trust with your franchise. I think maybe has a higher upside too. I think Daniels, in terms of how he forces the other team to play defense, is probably more in line with what current teams want in the NFL currently in terms of what their quarterback how their quarterback runs an offense.
I think I was swayed by the fact that the Bears have essentially already telegraphed Caleb Williams as their first pick. It kind of just makes it harder to do this, but I would have I would prefer Jaden Daniels. There are a lot of things that I don't like about Caleb Williams as a prospect for a lot of different ways. I don't know if we want to pivot over to him at this point, but Daniels is just, he would have been the guy that he's the guy that I wanted to move to one. And I'd say that the reason that I would want to take a look at moving Caleb Williams to number three is it's just the intangibles feel off for Caleb Williams to me. There's something just for the guy that does have the top arm talent. He can make all of the throws. He can do all the things that we've talked about today, all the things that you've asked for at the multiple levels, the different types of throws, the touch, the speed, the strength, all of those. He's got that. The pocket awareness checks all of those boxes. Seemed like he should have been the clear number one guy. You know, and Gabe and I have had a few conversations about this separately, and I don't know that he completely agrees with me on this, but they're just some of how he approaches the game, some of the ways that he approaches the professionalism of being the potential number one prospect bothered me. And again, I'm not saying that you have to be a certain way. I'm not bothered that he paints his nails. It's not that. It just seems like he has almost a cavalier approach to what some of those things were. And the same kind of thing will worry me next year about Deion Sanders' son. It's just like I don't know. But then at the same time, you got all of that professionalism and like all of that to the exact T from Trevor Lawrence. And he has not been the guy that Jacksonville and the entire league thought Trevor Lawrence should have been, you know, at this point in his career. So maybe it doesn't mean anything.
He was an unbelievable quarterback prospect who's been a good NFL quarterback as opposed to the best NFL quarterback. Yeah. I could see some of that. And you know, Caleb Williams did take a small step back from the Heisman in his third year, right? Third year, fourth year. I've lost track of how many years people have been in college at this point, but in not his senior year or his first senior year, he won the Heisman. And that was true. That was true of Lamar too, right? At Louisville, Lamar did not win in his last year, but he won it in the previous year. It's by the way, normal for players to take a step back when they win an early Heisman like this, unless you're Archie Griffin from the 70s and you win it twice with Ohio State, you typically take a step back. There's so many things to love about him in terms of what he does. Really throws well on the move. But I think what people are going to come back to is the struggles under pressure. And for the Bears in particular, boy, I think Daniels would have been the better pick. And part of it may be they had still some Justin Fields shock and not wanting Fires that kind of a quarterback again. Yeah. And that they said, okay, we tried that. Let's go back to having more of a pocket guy. And it's not like Caleb Williams can't run the ball at all, but he's just not a big weapon running the football. That's not where he brings you value. So, As a passer, it's really hard to find anything wrong. He's been incredibly consistent, 93-14 in the touchdowns. The one thing I would say is that he's had a high percentage of turnover-worthy plays. And in the case of him versus Drake May, and you talk about dropping him to number three, Drake May had a much lower percentage of turnover-worthy throws. And I think he was the guy who was at 1.9, and Williams is at 3.6%. So that's quite high for a draftable quarterback, by the way.
It did seem at times, and being out in LA, I've seen USC probably more than some other teams. A little hero ball action, a little bit of pressing from Williams when it came in that regard. I think some of that comes with the pressure after being the Heisman winner and all the things that come with that and the hype that comes with that. And I think, I don't know, there's just, you're right that from a talent perspective overall, it's all there. But I think that you talk to any NFL evaluator, coach, scout, whatever level of what you'll talk to someone, it's not just the talent that these guys play with. It's what's between the ears that ultimately is the thing that really separates these guys. And I think Lamar is a really good example of that, where he's a guy Lamar as a runner is the best open field runner, in my opinion, in the NFL. Right. But the thing that has made Lamar a two-time MVP and the guy that we love as a quarterback is because he has done a ton of work on improving every other asset of his game that he needs to. He goes about it professionally. He is very under the radar. I mean, you know, for as much as you want to say about kind of him getting sick during the game, he's a very under the radar player. all the reporters talk about how polite and kind he is. Those kind of intangibles, you know, those kind of things and that kind of approach to the game says a lot to me, because the NFL season is a grind, especially now that it's 17 games. Who knows in a few years if it's going to be 18 games and a bye. Just, and I say that that might actually be safer for the players to have an extra bye thrown in there, but it's 2 weeks longer in a season then. It's a grinding season that you're kind of going through all of this. And if you're not mentally ready for it, I don't think I would be mentally ready for it. I think if you're not mentally ready to handle it and you don't want it in that regard, you can't, you're not going to be like Tom Brady was obsessive. I mean, you can tell whenever you hear him interview and whenever you hear him talk, the guy is just OCD about certain things about football to the extreme. Caleb Williams just, I don't know. It just doesn't strike me that way.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he can't be successful.
I mean, it is the problem, generally speaking now, and something you really need to be careful of when you're drafting, to find the guys who are completely committed professionally and don't have that huge outside interest that's going to take a ton of their time. And in Kyler Murray's case, you know, it was Call of Duty or whatever game he was playing a lot of, and not really wanted to spend the time away from the building, learning the, you know, learning the playbook. I mean, that's bad enough, but also not taking the time in the off scene is necessary to see a QB guru and try and figure out what can I improve on. And guys who are on the fringe of the NFL have always been better at doing that. Lamar is really extraordinary in terms of a star player who saw the value very quickly in terms of maintaining a QB guru and stuck with it. And something you just do not always see from players. I don't think Joe Flacco had it. I think he was a guy who really wanted to get away from football and be with his family during the offseason. I think there's a lot of other players who are already preparing for a broadcasting career or other careers, for that matter. If you're Fitzgerald, you might be looking for a career in banking already during the offseason. But they want their time off. They want to go gamble. They want to travel. They want to go do it. And that's fine, except it does kind of reduce your value to the team you're with, that you don't want to try and improve yourself as an athlete during that time off. And I don't think that's a completely unfair criticism for Caleb Williams. And I think if this were the Ravens making this draft pick, which thankfully it isn't, I think they would be pretty good about ferreting out whether or not he'd be able to do that. And the great question I heard ascribed to Ozzie from Daniel Jeremiah related to the Alabama defense 1 year, I think it was the Alabama defense. Prescott Burgess was on the team. I have to go back and look. It might not have been Alabama, but I think it was. And they had a number of draftable players on that defense. Fantastic defense. And one of them was, you know, Prescott Burgess, who went eventually to the Ravens in the sixth round. They asked everybody who was the leader of the defense, and they mentioned some inside linebacker. And you know, he was an NFL player, a name I recognize, but I don't think he'd had the longest career there for whatever reason. And everybody else said that guy was the leader. And Prescott Burgess said it was me. And Ozzie said, hey, do you guys get together and watch film? He goes, yeah, man, every Monday night we're in there watching film after for the previous Saturday, try to get ready for the next week. We watch as a defensive unit. We come over, we have popcorn, and we have this. And Ozzie said, who holds the clicker? And he said, you know, the remote to move the play forward and backward. And it was the other guy who everybody else said was the leader. Made complete sense. I cannot imagine Ray Lewis or Ed Reed not holding the clicker or not holding the remote in their particular film study sessions with the defensive backs. Because, you know, first of all, if you're Ray, you'd be driving the other guys nuts, telling people, okay, wait, go backward, go forward. Here, you take the clicker, right? I can't stand having the remote. I don't want to be told what to do. So it made a lot of sense that it would have been another player. But anyway, the Ravens still drafted Burgess. But that kind of questioning is the kind of thing that the Ravens would have their way to get to the bottom of whether or not Caleb Williams was really going to work during the offseason by asking a question that he would probably trip on like a pothole in terms of what he wants to do during the offseason kind of thing. As much as he'd be coached up for it.
Right, exactly. And I'm not saying he's not going to be good. I'm not saying that he isn't going to potentially be an MVP. I'm not saying he can't win a Super Bowl. I'm not saying he's not a good person. I'm just saying that when we talk about trade value, I think, you know, you and I have in a similar, maybe we don't value the same things, but we have the same mentality about how we look at some of this stuff. And if I'm going to be picking at 1.1 and the value of what 1.1 really means and the highway robbery of which Chicago managed to get that pick and to be able to pick there to maximize that value, is that exactly what I'm getting out of Caleb Williams? Really kind of like what I'm saying to myself in this draft, you know, given their multiple picks here, can we wait? What does that look like? All of those things and how those things play out. And I agree with you. The Ravens play that game almost better than anybody in the entire league. The way they play the comp pick game, they've kind of regressed a bit, just kind of how the team's been constructed in the world of comp picks. They're going to blow right back by everybody after this year and probably next in terms of just how they who they can keep and who they can't keep in these processes. And so it's fascinating to me to kind of ferret out where that value is. But then also when the Ravens make a pick, you're usually like, oh, it seems like they knew what they were doing. There've been a couple that head scratchers. I think Ben Mason being maybe one of them. That might have been a favor to brother Jim at the time. But outside of that, it does seem like they always just you can see the clear line of what they were thinking. You can see how it fits within the plan, kind of once everything has kind of the layers have been pulled back and how they've done it and how they've approached it. It's really nice to be able to root for a team like that.
Yeah. It makes all the difference in the world to really believe in what your front office is doing for you. And as a season ticket holder, I can't tell you how happy I am that the Ravens have the philosophy they have of levelized success. And you know, as much as you look at the teams who've played the roller coaster ride the best, which the one in recent history is the Rams. I really wish they hadn't had success with it, but they're the one team that's really made it work in terms of trading a bunch of draft picks, going for a peak year, winning the Super Bowl, and dealing with the consequences after that as well as could be hoped. You know, I think, you know, they've been a team who's done that. The Ravens won the Super Bowl. They should have been nowhere near in 2012 because they were always there in the postseason. You know, they were a good team. And it's the worst of the first five Harbaugh years is the team that actually ends up winning the Super Bowl. And, you know, it's not like that team was not as good as the 11 team. They were not as good, no way, as the 10 team. And they were not as good as the 09 team that was 9-7, lost a bunch of games they shouldn't have, but was very dominant and went on to kick New England's ass in the playoffs. Any of those other teams were better. And it just, that to me is the validation of the levelized play argument. And the 2000 Ravens, if you want to look at it, were another team that did it by that. They did it with an extreme, you know, positive defense. And they did it actually in their case with some free agency. Not trading away the draft picks, but with some free agency that did end up having to be paid for. But, you know, both those, I love what the Ravens have done front office wise, and it's very easy to root for them as a season ticket holder. All right. Been a ton of fun doing this. So we'll review this the top five for each of us in this case. So I had the top five as Knicks at five, McCarthy at four, Drake May at three, Caleb Williams at two, Jaden Daniels at one. And your top five again was?
I had Knicks. I just closed it. I recall it. Knicks at five, Penix at four, Drake May at three, Daniels at two, Caleb Williams at one.
Okay. Nice to have some difference of opinion there at the top. Always makes for a fun conversation, as any football conversation is with you, Jordan. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you guys can find me at Raven Sit Room on Twitter, talking about Ravens, but also hopefully getting excited about this Orioles season coming up too.
Yeah, I was there today, and I'll tell you, it was an awfully fun opening day where they could do no wrong. You know, one hit, 11 strikeout performance from Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns misses bats, and he misses bats at a time when it's important to miss bats. So he had 11 swinging strikes through, I think, five innings, and he had 9 strikeouts at that point, and all of them were swinging. So if you think about that, he had 9 of his 11 swinging strikes came with 2 strikes already on the hitter. So there's a guy who knows how to get that third strike. I really appreciate that in a pitcher. And they paid a lot to get him. And you know, we've been over this before, that you don't think the cost of Ortiz is all that high. I do. But it's a one-year deal, but the early returns are fantastic. And the offense looked great too. Adley Rutschman, 7 for 7 in his first 7 opening day at bats.
Yeah. Unbelievable. This is a team. I mean, still don't have Jackson Holliday up here on this team. You know, got Urias and Mateo playing today. Yep. There's room for improvement on this roster. Bradish coming back, Means coming back. Bautista isn't even going to play this year. I mean, this is just, it's hard not to be excited about this team.
Right. They've definitely got improvement. I mean, we don't want to go in the Orioles too much, but I do want to say this. I think there could be some improvement right away if Hayes became a platoon player. I think they would gain from that if they, you know, would get Colton Cowser out there a lot more. They have 3 outfielders they basically middle fingered. Colton Cowser, in terms of his likely amount of playing time, although the Orioles will face some right-handers at some point, other teams going to load up on left-handed pitching against the Orioles. And they still kept all of their 3 older outfielders. The only place on the team where they're really old is in the combination of Hayes, Mullins, and Santander. And, you know, Santander had 4 RBIs and a 2-run homer, and Mullins, it's a 3-run homer. And, you know, it's hard to get really. Yeah.
You know, it's not old.
No, he's in his last year of arbitration. So he's going to be lost to free agency. So if you could trade a player like that, you'd probably be happy doing it. They probably explored it and weren't able to get value. But, you know, Kerstad and Cowser and who's the third guy I'm thinking of? Outfielder who got sent down. Kerstad, Cowser, and... Jeez, who's the third guy? The other outfielder who got sent down. He's a blonde guy, tall, and he's been on the team before for 2 years. But he's not called Cowser or Kirsten.
McKenna.
No. No, it's this guy. McKenna. This guy, left-handed hitter, yeah. Big power hitter. Left-handed hitter, Stowers. So 3 guys they sent to the minor leagues who, you know, should be on an opening day roster somewhere, not to mention Connor Norby. And anyway, it's hard to be frustrated after an 11-3 opening day win where everything went perfectly and the Orioles really look like the team to beat again. And yet this is a team that it should be a lot better than they are in terms of the talent on the field. All right.
Absolutely. Good year to be a Baltimore fan in general.
Jordan, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.